people think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think
class war.
Class war, the only war.
We want to just quickly send a nice friendly message to the Fraternal Order of Police in Philadelphia.
This is an anti-Nazi song.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Rebel Beat, a Firebrand Records podcast. My name is Aaron. Thanks so much for being with us. And Happy New Year to all of you. It's so good to have you back with us for 2018. We have an amazing show to get to today. We're going to bring you a people's history of music a la Howard Zinn with my good friend Dror. He's a grassroots music journalist, a blogger, and a community organizer. We're going to get really deep into it and hear some amazing clips, some amazing cuts of people's resistance music from all around the world. So don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back here on the Rebel Beat for January 2018. As we start the show, this is a pretty devastating moment, not only up here where I live in Quebec, but certainly in many different parts of the world, specifically in Quebec, because January the 29th will mark the one-year anniversary of the horrible mosque shooting just outside of Quebec City, where white supremacist Alexandre Bissonnette walked into a mosque and shot dead six men as they were praying. One thing that's pretty disturbing to see in the aftermath of this is how little attention is paid to systemic violence and systemic Islamophobia that is really running rampant all across North America and parts of the Western world right now. There's this institutional forgetting where there will be one day of commemoration paid to these men and then people will move on as if this isn't such a huge problem in so many people's lives. Well, here at the Rebel Beat, we want to resist and push back against that institutional forgetting and come together to build more of a collective memory around January the 29th and more broadly against racist and Islamophobic violence in this society. It's important to say the names. Remembering is a radical act. So here are the six men who were killed in that mosque shooting almost 1 year ago. Ibrahima Barry, Mamadou Tanu Barry, Khaled Belkacemi, Abdelkarim Hassan, Azzedine Soufiane, and Aboubakar Thabti. If you're on Facebook, do check out Remember Jan 29th. It's an amazing collection of people's reflections looking back on this massacre and reflecting on Islamophobic policies, Islamophobic violence. And also, it's been just over a year since the orange menace Donald Trump took office. He was inaugurated January 20th, 2017. I really can't believe this shit. Or I guess you kind of have to believe it at this point, like how ridiculous it gets every single day. As always, we want to send our solidarity out to the January 20th defendants, those brave hundreds of people who were arrested in D.C. In the anti-fascist, anti-capitalist demonstration resisting Trump's inauguration. Many of them are still facing charges. Some of them have already had their charges dropped, which is amazing. But, you know, do remember to constantly be checking out updates in their trial. And of course, our unending solidarity for people resisting Donald Trump and his racist, sexist policies wherever you are. So we're going to start off with a tune tipping our hats to the front lines of this anti-racist, anti-Islamophobic survival. And again, to all those standing up against 45, the politics he represents everywhere in the world, from Pittsburgh to Palestine to Paris. Let's get into this.
Bismillah.
Like the feeling when I miss Falah, then wish to God and clouds to lift us all.
Alhamdulillah.
I wonder if BB can ever see me, and if I go back to Basra, will it ever receive me? Bismillah. Homies that have the time to talk, now I wish for stars that angels find a walk.
Alhamdulillah.
I stand ordered the strength of my sister, kiss her and thank God our mission is planned for.
Bismillah.
Mamati, inti hayati, mom the best one, hold her close to heart like my left hand.
Alhamdulillah.
For the truth and the being is beaming as the moon queen, you bless my future to be with.
Bismillah.
For the soul's anguish, love, and the moment my brothers program these drums.
Alhamdulillah.
We put the truth to the test, proof that we bless students of this music at best. It goes. Militants try to split this law.
Alhamdulillah.
For every living day that we spent in the rays of the shams while we praise the condemned.
Bismillah.
Wish I could take it back and lift the harm, make a track, erase the past that we missing.
Alhamdulillah.
He spoke so right, we listen wrong, living raw, more than a living song. Give it
Bismillah.
All.
Bismillah.
So I don't rely on an image or man-made divisions for land, slave, prison,
Alhamdulillah.
Fall. Excuse me if I use it loosely, forget to bow down and pray. How proud are they? Hope you hear the whispers, then ask which stance should I sway between my whispers.
Alhamdulillah.
Forever, hope this lasts, and we live class. Without a ball and a chain, a slave falling and claim.
Bismillah.
We're forever holding the peace. Wicked streets, crippled little beams rippling through the Middle East.
Alhamdulillah.
May God bless the dead and gone, forever strong, a better song, breaking bitter bonds.
Alhamdulillah.
For this world and this spot to this song, with these words for hip hop, say
Alhamdulillah.
Stay humble and rhymes for eyes, hate your hunger, it's like a jungle sometimes.
We've been been here before. All the pillars came ashore.
Fuck what he say, I've been free, ayy. Fuck what he say, I've been free, ayy. Fuck what he say, I've been free, ayy. Back at it again.
Here they go again.
Your shenanigans. Break closed doors just to get 10, fit 10. But you can't sit 10. Back at it. Words that we spitting, or build worlds where we sitting.
You could never build worlds where we sitting. Can't confuse us of our mission. No set tripping. Balance not bipartisan. Politic and keep the crack piling in. No more bending bodies of the black man. Finna rip my people under Klux Klan. Finna free my people from their minds. Need we remind ya? We've been free since time. Check the date. My mama told me in this country it was never great. Don't take them serious, belief, but only validate. And all that love trumps hate.
There are people who say but there's not a chance in hell that we'll sit back and watch you try to turn back the clock and just sigh and say, oh well. No, we'll fight you every step of
nothing will ever be the
welcome back to the Rebel Beat, the Firebrand Records podcast. As always, you can reach us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rebel Beat Radio. We're on Twitter at Rebel Beat Radio. We got an Instagram account. Or if you're old school like myself, and if you like email, do drop us an email at rebel@ckut.ca. Always love to hear from our listeners. Always open to hearing your feedback, your comments. And it's really like our listeners who help keep this show strong. Had someone email me the other day say they want more music on the show, which I know I've been moving a little bit away from music and more towards interviews. So we're going to try to balance that out a little bit as we move forward in 2018. And of course, if you like this podcast, please support us. This show is free, but of course, like many other podcasts, making it isn't. We have a Patreon account, so you can head on over to patreon.com/rebelbeatradio. Even if you can only throw us $1 a month, it's not that much to you, but it is a lot to us, and every little thing helps. We're going to try out a new thing this year. So for everyone who signs up for $5 a month through Patreon, I'm going to be sending out a special monthly newsletter full of musical recommendations, videos, download links, and a whole bunch more. So if you want kind of a little extra content, a little icing on your Rebel Beat cake, again, patreon.com/rebelbeatradio. Sign up for $5 a month. We still have some other amazing perks. Like we still got a whole bunch of t-shirts left. We got beautiful enamel pins. So head on over there and, you know, show us a little bit of love by throwing some coins our way. And of course, the Rebel Beat is a proud member of the Channel Zero Network of Anarchist Podcasts. Check them out at channelzeronetwork.com. Here's a little taste of what they have to offer.
We are at war!
The Soulcast is a twice-a-month anarchist podcast hosted by North American rap artist Soul. It's a podcast about revolutionary politics from an anarchist perspective. Every month, I interview academics, journalists, revolutionaries, quote-unquote activists, artists, musicians, and really anything that I find interesting. I never got to go to college, so this, I guess, is my cheat sheet. So anybody who wants to learn, you can learn with me. Subscribe in iTunes at tinyurl.com/soulcast. And check it out on the Channel Zero Podcast Network.
We are at war!
All right, so we're going to get now to our special interview on the show today. And this is a really fun one. This is a really good one to start out the new year here in 2018. So a little while ago, I had a chance to speak to a friend and comrade of mine, Dror. Now, Dror is a really fascinating person because I know him first and foremost as an organizer. He's super dedicated to Palestine solidarity and the BDS movement, boycott, divestments, and sanctions against Israeli apartheid. But he also has a keen ear for music. He is a lover of soul, funk, and people's liberation songs. And last winter, he did this amazing workshop series for this organization in Montreal. It's called Université Populaire, or the People's University. So the whole idea behind that is to really get the transmission of knowledge outside of the ivory tower, outside the walls of the university, and just set up kind of like free people's courses in cafes and bars around the city where people come together and talk about ideas. I think it's very much like within a lot of radical traditions like anarchism and communism, of people coming together in these public spaces to debate, discuss, and learn. So anyways, Dror put on a four-part series for that called Une Histoire Populaire du Chanson, or A People's History of Song. And it was a four-part series. So in it, he kind of broke down political songs into four different categories, which are really interesting. So he talked about immigration songs, historical songs, revolutionary songs, and dangerous songs. Of course, he talked a lot about Prince. He's a big lover of Prince, and I have to say I am too, about the BDS cultural boycott in solidarity with Palestine, rather, and a whole lot more. Dror runs this amazing music blog called Entre les Arrêts, or In Between the Ears. It's a blog in French, but even if you don't read French, I would really recommend checking it out because there's some amazing links up there, some really good videos. And the beautiful thing about music is that it speaks beyond language. So, you know, even if you don't understand the lyrics or the language of the song is being sung in, a lot of times you can just pick up on the energy and the vibe. So we'll put a link to Dror's blog in our show notes. But here we are. Let's get into that interview. This is A People's History Through Song with Dror. Here right now with our very special guest on the Rebel Beat today, we have a local organizer and musical journalist in his own right, revolutionary musical journalist Dror. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you for inviting me. Glad to be here.
All right. So we're going to be talking about this amazing four-part workshop series that you put together recently for UPOP here in Montreal, which is the Université Populaire, or the People's History, called A People's History Through Songs. But before we get into that, just introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I guess I have a regular job, but I've been... apart from that, organizing here in Montreal, also in France. I've lived in France until a couple of years ago, until I moved here. And I was always passionate with music, but also politics. So whenever I can, I try to mix both. So I used to write in several newspapers, having music columns. And I organized in France and in Montreal, mostly around international issues, Palestine, Middle East, and other international related issues for social justice, and I guess to summarize.
Nice. Yeah. So we'll definitely get into talking a little bit about that organizing more later. But I want to come back to, like I said, you have kind of an amazing mind for radical or revolutionary music journalism, and you're doing it like on a very DIY basis. You have a blog. It's in French. It's called Entre les Oreilles. For our listeners who don't understand French, that's between the ears. Tell us a little bit about this blog.
Yeah, so actually in 2008, I was contacted by some friends who were putting up a new newspaper in France called Ciné Hebdo. And I asked to do the music column on there. So I had a weekly music column in Ciné Hebdo for 2 years, 2008, 2010. And the column was kind of short, and I was frustrated. And after each column, I wanted to add some stuff. So I created this blog, which initially was supplemental information and maybe having music to download related to the column. And it became a weekly blog that I continued even though the journal... it's finished now. I mean, it turned into a monthly newspaper, but I'm not part of it anymore. So I kept doing the column. So my idea was to have, I mean, there's news every week that's worth to talk about. And mostly things, I try to find connections between music and politics. So I don't always find some every week, but most weeks I try to have some little discoveries, like gems that you can download on the blog, mm-hmm. and kind of little histories relating either recent or older music and political events, also if possible connected to the news.
Yeah, and I'm curious because, like, as you just mentioned, like, you lived in France for a long time. I can think of a ton of amazing political music that's come out of France, and so I'm just like wondering, like, you know, where did the inspiration for this kind of work come out of? Like, did it come out of a particular music movement that you were a part of, either in France or maybe even here in Montreal?
Not particularly. I think I've been a music fan forever, and then growing up, I've gotten more interested into the lyrics and made particular attention to songs that had interesting and political and, if possible, like revolutionary lyrics. And I don't actually think it's necessarily related to France or wherever I was, because I'm a big fan of soul funk music. So a lot of soul funk is not particularly political. But when you come you come across one that is, then you give it a more special, you know, interest and. So maybe I also have my personal tendency of kind of collecting stuff, and I make lists and playlists. Mm-hmm. And eventually it's kind of easy to find in almost every type of song, and particularly if you talk of songs coming from countries that deal with difficult situations, interesting lyrics and interesting messages coming from those kind of songs.
For sure, yeah. I mean, you brought up soul and funk. Like, I always think of, you know, James Brown, Black and Proud, you know, in terms of, like, a lot of his music wasn't really political, but the context he was coming out of was super political.
Exactly. I mean, James Brown was a big Nixon fan, so it's kind of hard, but you can always find some politics even in James Brown. And you're right. I mean, you can also find just political the fact that his music was defying the genre of its time and you know, putting the beat up front and even neglecting maybe melodies to put more the beat in. I mean, there's everything's political if you want to look at it like this. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into talking a little bit more about this recent workshop series that you presented, because essentially what we're doing here on the Rebel Beat today is we're going to kind of like take our listeners into a condensed version of this workshop. This workshop spanned several weeks, and so of course we won't have time to get into everything, but like I said, it was a four-part workshop series as part of Université Populaire or UPOP, which is really this amazing series of knowledge production, if we can call it that, here in Montreal, where the idea is to really kind of like break down the model of the ivory tower and to bring popular education like into cafes and into different venues around the city. And so you teamed up with them and you put on this this workshop series throughout the winter and early spring this year called A People's History Through Songs. Let's start with the first one you did, Songs of Immigration or Immigration Songs. Take us into that and tell us what you talked about.
So the UPOP idea is also to have a discussion with the public, so I can also get feedback and I can now tell you what was good and bad about each of these courses. And for the first one, for example, I understood that I was French, so that my background influenced a lot the way I picked the songs. So it's immigration songs viewed from France.
Right.
So there's a lot of Algerian songs because for us in France, a big part of the immigration community is Algerians, mm-hmm. and when you don't know, you sing a lot of, you know, you play and you hear a lot of Arabic songs and you play the lyrics, but you don't necessarily understand what they say. And I guess one of the first one that came to mind to me is Ya Raya, that you probably know here in Montreal too, mm-hmm. the famous song that you probably know from Rachid Taha, yeah. That is played in every party in France, or at least was played in every party until recently. It's a very sad song, actually. That's a song about an immigrant, or actually somebody who immigrated a long time ago, who sees a new immigrant coming and tells him, you know, good luck, guy. It's going to be tough. You're going to even regret coming here because things are tough here, and a lot of people came here because they didn't know how tough it was, and you may not even be able to stand it, and you may have to go back because it's going to be too difficult for you. Mm. And nobody knows that when you dance on this
right.
song.
It's such an upbeat song.
Right, and people don't even know that Rachid Taha didn't write it. It's a song from the 70s from
oh, wow.
Dahman and Harashi. The version is not very different, the one that Rachid Taha took on, but still the lyrics are important. رايح وين مسافر تروح تعيا وتولي شعال ندموا العباد الغافلين قبلك وقبلي يا رايح وين مسافر تروح تعيا وتولي شعال ندموا العباد الغافلين قبلك وقبلي Maybe that's another thing that I want to say about Yaraya, is that not only the lyrics is interesting, the song is a good song, but it tells us something that we didn't know, that there was a culture in France that nobody knew. There was a kind of alternative culture of of immigrant in France, and apparently those records sold a lot. But then these singers were not famous by French people. They were actually not even that famous with Algerian people in Algeria. They were only famous within a small circle of Algerian immigrants in France. But enough to have records, to have little video clips that people survived. And there are many, many such singers. So Dahman and Harashi is one, but there are many others. And thanks to this kind of history work, we get to know these people.
Wow. All right, well, let's get into some music right now from Rashid Taha. And, of course, we're speaking with Dror about this workshop series of people's history through songs. Back here on The Rebel Beat, talking about a people's history through songs with our special guest, Dror. And the second workshop that you presented going along in the series was one on historical songs. So take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I had I wasn't sure of giving the names for each workshop. So historical song was more for me coming from noticing that song, and that's maybe the course of the most important message, that songs are little historical courses, alternative historical courses, people's historical courses, because they let you learn about heroes, popular heroes, that normal history courses will never tell you about. Like if you go to French history class, they will tell you of who in France was fighting in the Algerian War. They will never give you the name of the Algerian hero that fought. But Algerians, they have their own songs who will talk about Abdelkader, who is their hero. Of course, he lost in the end, but for 15 years, he was giving a really hard time to the French army and resisted, is a hero for them, and is a hero still today because he's kind of a figure of resistance against colonial oppression. So that's one example. So the idea of the course was to try to find heroes, either famous or preferably not so famous ones, that songs praised and sung through song and through good songs maintain their memory in people's minds and allows to transmit this memory from generation to generation.
Amazing. So what was one of your favorite songs that you pulled out from that?
So depending if I tried to have some like famous or less famous people. So it could be either like Rosa Parks or Che Guevara or Angela Davis. Those are more famous ones. But then I tried to, Stephen Biko in South Africa, Thomas Sankara in Burkina Faso. And maybe the one I would want to focus on today is one that is less famous, and also is sung by a woman. I try to have, I don't think I had equal number of women and men in my courses, but there was a good 40%, I would say. And so this one is Rimbana, a Palestinian singer. And she talks about Fares Odeh, and you probably don't know who Fares Odeh is. Maybe you do, but maybe a lot of listeners don't. But you probably have seen his picture. It's this little kid who sends a stone against an Israeli tank. And it's so beautiful.
Is
picture.
It the famous iconic one?
That was turned into T-shirts.
Right. Wow.
And so Fares Odeh, it's in 2000 he sends his stone. It's during the Second Intifada. And he survives that day, but he gets killed 10 days later by the Israeli army. And he's 14 years old at that time. Mm-hmm. And so people know the picture, but people don't know the name of the guy. So typically, through a song, because he's in the lyrics, if this song becomes famous, I don't think it became really famous, but it's a really beautiful song. So it travels around. It's on the internet. You find it on YouTube.
Yeah.
People get to remember the name of this kid, and he deserves it.
ستحملك الفراشات إلى ظهر غيمة ستجري بك الغزالة إلى جوف جميزة ستحملك رائحة الخبز والحليب شهيدا إلى حضن أمك.
I mean, that's amazing too, because, like, you know, just thinking about history and historical songs, like, that photo for me was so iconic, and I think for a lot of people too, because it really represented not only the asymmetrical nature of the Israeli occupation and Israeli apartheid, but also, like, the courage of Palestinian people and youth. Like, as you said, this 14-year-old kid who you see out there in the streets, and he looks tiny with this huge tank looming over him. And you know, it's devastating. But for decades, we've been seeing this. It's like Palestinians fighting back with rocks against one of the most powerful military occupations in the world.
Yeah, you can't help wanting to call it David and Goliath.
Right, but, exactly.
Kind of a different way. It also reminds a little bit of the picture in China of the man alone in front of the tank with his little plastic bag, but different context, but those are messages that are interesting. Yeah.
For sure. All right, well, let's get into that song right now. What did you say the name of the artist was?
Rimbana.
Rimbana here on The Rebel Beat.
قلبها للمرأة الثكلى قلب من حليب وزجاج للأب المفجوع قلب من دمع يضيء به السراج يضيء
All right, so we're back here on The Rebel Beat again, talking about a people's history through songs. We're going to move now to revolutionary songs. And I actually had the privilege of attending this workshop. Unfortunately, it was one of the only ones I could actually make it out to, but really fascinating presentation. So take us through this revolutionary songs.
Well, this one was also kind of hard to put together because I wanted to cover, I mean, you could cover many, many contexts. So I wanted to kind of touch upon several contexts. So I cut it into little pieces. So colonization, apartheid. So apartheid in South Africa, but also apartheid in Palestine. And then because I covered colonization, I also wanted to cover neocolonialism when supposedly after the African countries got the independence, how today they're still not really independent, and how France, for one example, continues to control and oppress those countries and steal their resources. And then I wanted to get to more recent examples like the Arab revolutions, where I had several examples of songs, and even more recent and more closer to here, because as I said, at first the first courses were maybe too French oriented. So I wanted to get to more North American examples with what happens in the US with the Black Lives Matter, also the Printemps Érable here in Montreal.
Right.
So I guess a wide diversity of songs, but
Well, so speaking of one of my favorite songs, actually, in this course on revolutionary songs, you played one that has essentially been stuck in my head ever since, and it's got an amazing video to it as well by Prince, Rest in Power. And it was Baltimore, I believe, is the name of the tune.
Right.
Tell us about that one.
This again is, I wrote an article after Prince died in a French newspaper and online. And that's typically what I try to do in this kind of course, and I also wrote it in my blog, trying to show that Prince, despite everything that everybody knows, like fun songs, sexual songs, party songs, if you look carefully, there are a lot of political songs throughout Prince's career. Mm. Some are implicit, some are very explicit. And I guess it's kind of ironic that his last song, this Baltimore, is his last video and his last single from his last album. Wow. It's very political. Like, mm-hmm. not only does it talk about Black Lives Matter, but it's not metaphoric. It names the name of Freddie Gray, and it ends the last. It's not Prince himself saying it, but you can hear in the back people saying, "If there is no justice, then there ain't no peace." I mean, right. It's really a rally song, which is maybe unexpected from Prince. And besides, it's a nice song. It's a good song. I mean, some people, even Prince's fan like me, didn't like everything that he did in the past couple of years. But actually, his last album was pretty good, and this last song of his last album was really a good song. So I was happy to play it too.
Amazing. Well, let's hear that right now, Prince with Baltimore on the Rebel Beat. Back here on the Rebel Beat, still speaking with musical journalist and organizer Dror about this whole amazing series of workshops of people's history through songs. The last one in the series we're going to look at is one you did called Dangerous Songs. Love the title for that. So tell
I was happy about this one too, and I was happy about the little subtitle to attract people to this course, because I was saying in French, I would try to translate it. Basically, if until now I haven't convinced you that songs and singers can be revolutionary and can be important, well, you should know that their enemies, they've been convinced, because they go as far as trying to imprison those singers, sometime chase them away from their country, and in the worst cases, put them in prison or kill them. Mm-hmm. And there are many, unfortunately, examples of singers who have been either killed, put in prison, or that had to go in exile for what they've done. So there again, there was I could have put dozens of songs. I had to pick a dozen, if I remember. But and you can find that in from Soweto to Paris. I mean, it's not only in those in dictatorships that you find that. I mean, censorship, the power is always unhappy when singers, and especially singers that become popular, tell the truth about them. So,
So yeah, like give us a few examples of artists that have come under the gun or under the boot of the state for their art.
I had several examples from the 70s, from Chile, for example. Obviously, you had a band like Quilapayún who had to go in exile because of their political implication, but they were, in quotes, lucky because Victor Jara, him, was assassinated. So for just being a singer, for just being a singer and a guitar player.
El hondo frisol de la patria se levanta el clamor popular. Ya se anuncia la nueva alborada. Todo Chile comienza a cantar, recordando al soldado valiente cuyo ejemplo lo hiciera inmortal. Enfrentemos primero a la muerte, traicionar a la patria jamás. Venceremos, venceremos, mil cadenas habrá que romper. Venceremos, venceremos, la miseria sabremos vencer. Venceremos.
And wasn't there like an awful story, like the government cut off his fingers or his hand before?
Yeah, he was arrested the day of the coup against Allende. He was brought into a stadium with all the other prisoners and political prisoners. Then later on, a couple of days later, he was brought in a prison. But this prison was in kind of open air prison, so there were a lot of witnesses that could testify that he was taken apart and his finger were cut to tell him this is how you play the guitar. Well, you won't be able to play the guitar. And a couple of days later, he was just assassinated with 44 bullets. So wasn't given a chance to.
And I mean, for me, thinking about it, like it's really gruesome to talk about. But I mean, Victor Jara, of course, his music and his inspiration lives on. But when I think about it, it's like, you know, we're talking about dangerous songs. It really represents how musicians like embody this, putting their revolutionary politics on the front lines with their bodies and with their art. And if we think about the really tangible connections, because sometimes people think like there's like this connection between music and politics is like kind of ephemeral. You know, you can come back to someone like James Brown. It's like, okay, well, what did he actually really do for the cause? But then sometimes the relationships can be a lot more directly linked. And someone like Victor Jara, who paid the ultimate price for putting out music that inspired revolutions and revolutionary movements.
Right. But like I started the show with Miriam Makeba, who was in exile for 30 years out of her country. Then you can think of Fela. Fela survived, but he was there was attempt murders of him, and his mother was killed during one of the army attack on his house.
Colo mentality. I say you fit in, never release yourself. Colon mentality.
If you say you be colonial man, you don't be slave man before. They don't release you now, but you never release yourself. If you so, them they do.
There were, I played one song by Sheikh Imam, the Egyptian singer. He spent, people, it's hard to count, but people estimate that he spent almost half of his life in prison.
Wow.
It wasn't like years of, it was, you know, a couple of months at a time, but all in all, it was almost half of his life in prison, just for songs.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I played one song, and I translated the lyrics, and of course, you know, he called Saddam a dog, and Sadat, sorry, Anwar al-Sadat, the president at the time, the Egyptian president at the time, a dog and a traitor and an American ass kisser, but still, you don't. You know, should you go to prison for that?
I can think of a lot of really interesting examples. One of my favorite documentary films actually is the film Amandla, which looks at the role that music played in the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa. They talk about the singer Vusi Malasela, who was famous anti-apartheid singer in the 60s, who was hung by the apartheid government. When I was in Haiti about a decade ago, I visited Annette Auguste, who was in a Haitian prison cell. She'd been thrown in there by the coup government for her protest songs. I'm wondering, though, like, it'd be interesting to look at the North American context or the European context, right? Because it's like we often tend to think of like artists paying the ultimate price.
Definitely,
in the global South. I'm wondering if there are examples that we can think of this censorship, people paying a really heavy price.
Right. Maybe it's not as heavy, to be honest, but censorship for sure. And trials, and you know, maybe not prison, but fines or concerts that are canceled. So I have several examples in France, but you can think in the U.S. of N.W.A.
where yes,
their song
course.
Was, you know, censored.
Fuck the police coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got it bad because I'm brown and not the other color, so police think they have the authority to kill a minority. Fuck that shit because I ain't the one for a punk motherfucker with a badge and a gun to be beaten on. We can go toe-to-toe in the middle of a sale. Fucking with me, cause I'm a teenager with a little bit of gold and a pager. Searching my car, looking for the product, thinking every nigga is selling narcotics. You rather see me in the...
But in France, there's also rap. I mean, all the examples I can think of, recent ones, are rap bands. Mm-hmm. So in the course, I played a song by Zep called Nique la France, who was...
Which translates to fuck France.
Fuck France. And it was a song, and it was also part of a book that Zep published together with a sociologist and photographer. Basically, it was a very nice object with pictures, texts, you know, serious text, and music. And the basic idea was, it was called Nique la France, fuck France, but it was also called Devoir d'insolence. You have to be insolent. You have to challenge the authority, basically. And that's a duty for every citizen or every human being, every person, to challenge the authority. And the message was also like, you know, in France, there's a huge, very long tradition of challenging the authority of Brassens, of Aragon, of those French poets, white French poets. They were not very liked, but nobody, you know, sued them. They never went to prison for that. They were actually praised as French heroes. But as soon as it's a guy called Saïd, who's from Algerian descent, his concerts were canceled in many socialist cities, and then there was a trial from a fascist group, but he won the first case, but then there was an appeal, and now it's actually under the Supreme Court, la Cour de Cassation. So it's still not clear what will happen to him for daring to insult the French values. That was what was blaming him for.
Devoir d'irrévérence, devoir de résistance. On n'est pas là pour leur plaire. Nique la France et son passé colonialiste, ses auteurs, ses Roland et ses réflexes paternalistes. Nique la France et son histoire impérialiste, ses murs, ses remparts et ses délires capitalistes. Nique la France et son passé colonialiste, ses auteurs, ses Roland et ses réflexes paternalistes. Nique la France et son histoire impérialiste, ses murs, ses remparts et ses délires capitalistes. Ça y est, c'est réglé.
But if we can go to a song from Dangerous Songs, what would that be?
Yeah, I guess you said let's not focus only on the global South, so I don't know where you put Russia in there. Russia is also an example where I guess maybe it's halfway. And you can take the Pussy Riot, of course. It's an emblematic band. They went to prison. I mean, two of their singers went to prison for over a year, like almost 2 years, or maybe a little under 2 years, for their song called Borogoditsa Putina Progoni, which is Virgin Mary, please banish Putin. the song is mostly a political statement, and the most important thing is mostly the video, actually. It's only a 2-minute song, but it was kind of happening in a church in Moscow, denouncing the complicity with the church with the KGB and Putin. KGB is not called this anymore, but they still call it KGB.
Yeah.
And the power and the religion and oppression of women and gay rights. And, well, for doing this, you go to prison in Russia. And some people got killed, too. Maybe not singers, but some people get killed. So I guess that's another example not to be forgotten. And this is 2012 again. It's not 40 years ago. It's now, sure. Basically.
All right, well, let's get into some music from Pussy Riot. Unfortunately, we won't be able to show the video here, but at least we can hear some of their music, and we'll be right back.
Черные рясы, золотые погоны, все прихожане ползут на поклоны, призрак свободы на небеса.
И отправит Сибирь канала.
Глава КГБ, их главный святой, ведет протестующих святого конвой. Кто нас следящего не оскорбит?
Женщина может рожать и любить.
Welcome back to the Rebel Beat. We're still talking about a people's history through songs with our special guest, Dror. And, you know, lastly, you know, we went through, I guess, the four-part series, but you keep yourself quite busy here in Montreal as a solidarity activist and as an organizer, particularly around BDS, which is the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement in solidarity with the Palestinian people. So can you tell us a little bit about like the BDS organizing you do here, and maybe specifically in the context of like we're talking about radical music journalism, the cultural boycott of Palestine, if you can talk a little bit about that too.
Right. So at the moment, maybe there is not a strong cultural boycott campaign here in Montreal for now, but there could be in a couple of weeks. So the general, to put it in more context, the general BDS campaign, or the idea behind it, is that the only way to get change in the region is to put pressure on the Israeli government. And since our government's don't do that, then it's the people's duty again to put this pressure. And this pressure can be put in several ways: boycott, divestment, sanctions. So obviously that means don't buy any product coming from Israel. Try to convince the companies around you in Canada, in France, in the UK, in the US to divest from Israel. Basically try to not make profit from the occupation, and in such way isolate or point your finger at a country that doesn't respect the international law. And I mean, I guess it's a tentative movement of putting pressure. It could be a failure, but it seems that it works. Like maybe it doesn't work in the sense that Israel loses billions of dollars through our actions, but it loses reputation. It gets a bad image in the press because more and more people are conscious by the fact that this is not a normal country. This is a country where apartheid is still present today in 2017, a country where half of the Palestinian population is not allowed to go back, even though it is their country, and even the UN recognized the right of return of 5 million Palestinians out of 11. So a country where, you know, you still have a blockade in Gaza for the past 10 years and three wars. You have a wall that surrounds the West Bank, and this wall is illegal and steals more land than already was stolen in 67. So there's so many injustices that this campaign is a very small thing, but it works well because everybody can relate to it. It's something you can do in your daily actions. You can talk about it at work and with your union. You could do it at sports, as you were mentioning. Sports is a big area where boycott plays a part. There's actually a current campaign where Montreal was a little bit involved of trying to expel Israel from FIFA.
Right.
Because Israel, it's a soccer, international soccer federation where Israel plays a really terrible role by preventing Palestinian teams to fairly participate or Palestinian players to move around. And
there's been some amazing actions too, where the Israeli team has traveled abroad. I think the last big one that I can remember was in Scotland, and tons of fans came out to the stadium with Palestinian flags. Yes. And I think that, you know, that must have really gotten under the skin of the Israeli players.
Right. And so I guess the cultural boycott resembles this a little bit. It's very symbolic. I mean, again, Israel is not going to lose much money in that respect, especially when you ask, for example, Gil Scott-Heron not to play in Israel. Okay, if he won't play, maybe a couple of fans will be disappointed, but it's not a crime against humanity. Nobody's going to lose money. They can always listen to CDs. They can easily travel to the UK and see a concert of Gil Scott-Heron in the UK when he was alive. Mm-hmm. But when he decides not to go, it gives a message. It says don't play in a sense, you know, when you play in a playground. And Israel is not a playground. Israel right. is fucking war going on mm-hmm. there. You know, it's serious business. And you don't play, you don't entertain apartheid regime. So there's a lot of work to do. So that's the boycott part, is trying to convince artists, like Roger Waters does it a lot. But he has phone numbers of his colleague musicians right. and calls them and says, hey, guy, you shouldn't go because, you know, I didn't go and there's good reasons for it.
Has gotten fat. I'm caviar in fancy bars and subprime loans and broken homes. Is this the life? Succeed. We still need others to fail.
Well, I think we'll leave it there. Again, we've been speaking with Dror, who is a local music journalist and organizer about a people's history through songs. Thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you. It was great.
Welcome back to The Rebel Beat, a Firebrand Records podcast. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Dror from the music blog Entre les Arrêts, talking about a people's history of song. It's time now for our Turn It Up segment on the show. That's where we give a nod or pay our respects to a musician, a community organizer, or a group who are using their platform for social change and revolution. Today on the show, we actually are going to be big up in two people on the Turn It Up segment. So the first person is Jackie Shane. Now, Jackie Shane might have been a name unbeknownst to many soul music fans, unbeknownst to many in the music world up until recently, because she was an artist who primarily recorded her stuff in the 1960s, but also was a real pioneer in the transgender rights movement, the trans liberation movement, and her album, Any Other Way, was just re-released on the Numero label group. It's a really exciting album, just got my hands on it the other day. So a little bit about Jackie Shane before we hear some music from her. She was born in Nashville, Tennessee, but had to get out of the racist South where she was living in the 1950s after seeing fellow black folks being dragged off of buses and beaten in broad daylight. And so Jackie, like many people at the time,
made her way north, but actually made her way north all the way up into Canada. And she settled in Montreal for a while before moving on to Toronto, where she had most of her musical career and most of her recordings go down. So she proudly existed and thrived as a trans woman at a time in Toronto where it was actually illegal to go out dressed in public as a woman if you were perceived of being a man. This was also, so this was the mid-1960s. This is the pre-Stonewall era. One thing that was amazing about Jackie is that not only was she this amazing soul singer, but she used her stage banter during her live songs to sensitize her audience to different queer issues. And I want to read the last paragraph from the liner notes to this album because it really kind of sums up Jackie's mentality so well. So in speaking on how she broke barriers for gay and transgender people, Jackie says, "That was my intent. What I saw was injustice. I saw ignorance. I've given a lot, even risking my life. There are people who wanted to destroy me, especially the cops. They were so intent on destroying me, you have no idea, but they can't. I'm not going to let them destroy me. I would laugh at them. Their stupidity is laughable. I've had people who've said to me, to my face, 'You scare me.' I'm looking at them. Oh, please, you scare yourself." Here's some music from the great Jackie Shane.
People talking trying to break us up. Why can't they let us be? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but that talk don't bother me. People talking trying to break us up when they know that I love you so. Yeah, I don't care what the people may say. I'll never, never let you go. I've been abused deep down in my heart. And I've been strong. People talking, trying to break us up. I said they scandalize in my name. Shiny thing just to make me feel bad. And anything to make me shame.
All right, we're back here on The Rebel Beat, just about to round down the show. But the second person we want to pay tribute on our Turn It Up segment today is Hugh Masekela. Hugh Masekela was a South African jazz legend, a phenomenal trumpeter and storyteller, and a freedom fighter in the anti-apartheid struggle. Sadly, he passed away after a fight with prostate cancer on January 23rd at the age of 78 in Johannesburg. Not unlike Jackie Shane, and like many of his black South African compatriots, Masekela was forced into exile in the 1960s and resettled in the USA, where he went on to collaborate with people like Harry Belafonte, Paul Simon, and Miriam Makeba, who he was actually married to for a short period in the 1960s. I first came across Masekela through an incredible documentary film that you all listening should really check out, called A Mandala, A Revolution in Four-Part Harmony. In fact, that film is probably what inspired me to start doing The Rebel Beat, just seeing the incredible way that music played an integral part in the South African anti-apartheid struggle. So thank you, Hugh Masekela, for all you've given the world. We're going to go out on a clip from that film, A Mandala, and you'll hear Masekela speaking and performing his song, Stimela, or The Coal Train. But before we go, I want to say huge thanks to our special guest, Dror. Check out his blog, Entre les Arrêts. There's a link to it in the show notes. And as always, thank you to our Patreon supporters, Brian, Scott, Matt, Dan, Zachary, Ryan, Misha, Israel, Benjamin, Ross, Camilo, DJ Kill McKinley, Jesse, Dasha, Hunter, Lee, Russell, Yannick, and Andy, and Frank. Again, you can support us at patreon.com/rebelbeatradio. That's it for us. We're out. See you next month.
Every day of the year, except Sundays and holidays, trains come to a halt at this siding in Johannesburg. Every day, they unload cheap cargoes of human labor. Without these men, the economy of South Africa would collapse.
When all our land was taken, and we had to go to the urban areas to look for work, the train is what we had to like get on. So the train has always been a symbol of something that took away your mother or your father or your parents or your loved one. Because the train was really South Africa's first tragedy.
Thank you.
Sibérie.